Today, documentary films are experiencing a major renaissance, and for good reason. But why are audiences increasingly choosing fact over fiction?
Is it a dearth of realism, like endless comic book sequels and end-of-the-world action movies? Are viewers choosing authentic storytelling over spectacular visuals and far-fetched plots?
Or maybe it's because docs f***ing rule. Hi, I'm Parker Romaine.
And I'm George Chen.
And we host SupDoc.
We didn't go to film school. We're just two comedians that dork out on docs.
And since 2015, we've been recapping amazing documentaries with comedians, actors, and filmmakers like legendary comedians Dana Gould and Todd Glass.
Musicians like Yacht and Dan Deacon.
And even media stars like Jesse Thorne and Francesca Fiorentini.
The AV Club called us enlightening, and Boing Boing said, SupDoc is a great idea for a podcast.
So find us wherever you get your podcasts or join us at supdocpodcast.com.
And follow us on social media at SupDoc Podcast.
Welcome to the Escapist Comics Podcast. I'm Jessica Balboni.
I'm Robert Nicolesco.
And guess who's back?
Returning hero, Challenger awaits.
Jacob Rubin!
Woo! It's me.
Yeah.
I'm very quiet now. Hey, guys. It's so cool to be back on this podcast.
Yeah. Welcome back.
Episode 2000.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at now. Something like that.
Oh, really?
I don't know the numbers.
I don't know. Apparently, for some reason, our numbers are all messed up, so we have no idea where we are anymore.
Yeah. Whack.
We got things
like it's just,
I mean, how many issues of Fantastic Four are we up to now? We have no idea. They keep resetting it to number one. That's this show.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's kind of like where we are in our continuity. So,
yeah.
Volume 7.
Right.
We're in volume 7 now.
Volume 7.
That's real.
How's life in Hollywood?
It's cool. Yeah. Let me see. What exciting things have happened? I saw Keith David getting coffee.
Ooh.
I was in a Dos Equis commercial. That's
right,
true.
Right. We talked about that. We did. Jacob's famous now.
Yeah.
He's in a Dos Equis commercial.
Yeah. The audition, I had lines, and then the commercial, they're like, you didn't have any lines. Oh, okay.
That's how they pay me less.
Yeah. What else? I don't know. It's been cool.
You got a dog.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We got a dog named Ziggy. He's super cute. We came up, we visited the store, about a month or two ago. And I picked up Paper Girls, haven't read it yet.
Sounds like you.
But I will. Yeah. And I read all the, and Jess very helpfully sent me all the comics, well, almost all the comics that we're going to be talking about in the episode today. So I won't just have to sit here and go, oh, that sounds nice.
Yes. That sounds like something I wouldn't read. Not because right. I don't like it, just because I haven't gotten to it.
Right. Yeah. But I did read all of these, and I more or less liked all of them, but we'll get into it when we get into it.
We will.
But thanks so much for having me back. I'm very excited.
Yay, we're excited too.
Yeah, that's cool.
Let's get into it then, because we do have a lot of comics and news, all sorts of things are happening. Human Target was the first one we're going to get into, and it's by Tom King and Greg Smallwood, and Greg Smallwood did everything, because he is a design master.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Human Target's been around the DCU for quite a while. Christopher Chance. This is the second Human Target. There was an original other Human Target named Fred Venable. He was originally created in 1953 by Edmund Hamilton and Sheldon Moldoff. This is the second guy who is created by Len Wein and Carmine Infantino. Infantino?
Nice.
Tino.
I like Tino better. It sounds fancy.
Yeah.
Well,
I saw him speak at a panel for the 50th anniversary of Barry Allen or something at Comic-Con. And the way he talks about creating the Rogues Gallery, which I think one of the more defining and influential and important collection of villains in comics. He's just like, oh yeah. So they were like, we need a cold guy. And I was like, okay. And now we need like a hot guy. And I was like, okay. He was so chill about creating these guys.
Those guys did that entire generation. Most of them just did not give a shit.
Yep.
It's for the kids. Cigar hanging out of his mouth. Carmine.
Sorry.
Did he have a big cigar hanging out of his mouth while he was talking? If
it wasn't indoors in California, I'm sure he would have.
Yeah. He was one of those guys.
He carried this whole air of like, why are we doing this? Why are we celebrating this? I don't get it. This was a job.
Nice. Well,
yeah, but he was awesome. He was super cool.
I mean, he's a legend. He doesn't need to recognize it. It doesn't really matter what he thinks of himself.
He did the thing where like the captions had hands coming off of them that pointed at the thing that they were talking about. Was that him?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That was brilliant.
He created some of the best Batman covers too.
Yeah.
They're always like very like cinematic.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And kicked off the Silver Age. Going back to this though, this fits. It looks like, not comics of the era, but like advertisements of the era. Mm-hmm. It's super Darwin Cook inspired. Like I was just like reading the whole thing. I'm like Darwin Cook all over this thing.
Definitely. I do want to give a shout out too that they really brought this character back in the Vertigo era, like 99. Peter Milligan and Edvin Bukulvic brought him back then. And also like, I think they did like a graphic novel called like Final Cut and then like another 22 issue miniseries as well, which got canceled in 2005. But very famously, Rick Springfield played the Human Target in 1990. And they did like a very short run series, but they changed him to like a Vietnam vet. And then he was like a private investigator, bodyguard, and he was Christopher Chance, and he was.
It's
like,
still set in the.
It was no
it's set in the DC universe. The show.
I guess I don't know. It was. Huh. I mean, it was still a DC show, yeah, but it was in 1990, so I don't know. The Rick Springfield. It only lasted one season, so.
Was it a musical?
I think he played a rock star at one point in the show.
Oh, okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I feel like Human Target, just the premise, only really works as comics because you can buy someone being able to put on makeup to look like these people.
Yeah. They also made it another show in 2010 from 2011 starring Mark Valley. I have no idea who that is. It deviated, though, from the comic version because the character would assume a nondescript identity to keep him close to the target. Than rather like actually taking on the target's identity. I guess that kind of like makes up for like having to wear a complete disguise or like change your face like Mission Impossible, you know?
So it's like the same idea, just less fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Cause I mean, that's what I was thinking. Like the only way it would work in live action is like, it's like, yeah, Mission Impossible where it's like cut away from the real actor pulling at their skin, cut to something, and then it's Tom Cruise pulling a rubber mask off.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
It would work much better today since special effects have gotten so much better, obviously. Mm-hmm. They had the whole face swapping technology, but yeah.
Or if they did it with like sort of a rotoscoping draw on the like live action style, right? Mm-hmm. So it's still the same actors behind it. That could be really cool.
Or whatever Liam Neeson's technology in Darkman was.
Ooh, yeah.
He made fake faces.
He did.
Anyway, we're off topic.
That's the show.
Now back to the show. Yeah. I loved this one, though, because we got some great characters that we haven't seen in a long time, like Dr. Midnight.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I love how he practices medicine in a superhero costume. He's not even like... No. You don't need to wear the mask right now, dude. We all know you're Charles.
Yeah. But he can't see. He has to wear those goggles all the time, right?
But he should. He doesn't have the cape. Doesn't help him see.
He's also still not wearing white gloves. Aren't you supposed to put on gloves to, like, do doctor stuff? Like, But he is everyone's, is it this canon? Has this been canon that he's everyone's doctor?
He's the superhero doctor. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a superhero.
Oh, okay.
Doctor, especially for the JSA.
He's the only DC hero with like a medical degree or the license to practice medicine. And so he just knows. Yeah. He knows Dr. everything
Fate
about.
Doesn't actually have a degree. He's just called Dr. Fate.
He's an archaeologist.
Yeah, PhD in archaeology.
Yeah.
I need a doctor. I can look at bones.
I mean, I love Dr. Ben. I love how absurd, and I also love how they're like, all right, he's the only doctor in the DCU, which means he has to know everything about medical science, even things that, like, you know, he's not just a cardiologist, he's not just a pulmonologist, he knows everything.
Mm-hmm. Including Martian physiology.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes he calls on the Atom to do like surgery and shit. It's a team up, which I love.
Like, I want that book.
Yeah, I want that book too. Dr.
That'd
Midnight
be great.
Dr. Midnight's never had his own book. I think Tom King should also do a Dr. Midnight book.
He had a 3-issue miniseries that I have.
Did he?
Yeah, it was like when, because this version of Dr. Midnight didn't appear until the 2000s. I remember it was prestige format, so it was like in the nice, you know, covers and whatnot. It wasn't very good. The art was kind of like a bit too like painty, you know, a bit too abstract. And also the story wasn't super interesting. But yeah, they did take a swing, but he deserves another swing, I think.
Yes. I mean, he's the original Daredevil, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they stole that from him. He was blind. He also knows martial arts. I mean, he's a doctor instead of a lawyer.
This guy's blind?
Interesting. Yeah, he's blind. He was,
doesn't that inhibit?
The original character was blinded by like chemicals or something like that.
The lenses that he wears allows him to see, but now he can see like everything. He can see it in the dark. He can see like he has like perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His power is kind of just night vision, which like if you look at every superhero, that's kind of like lame, but I don't know. It's neat.
Yeah.
I like the C-stringers. I'm a fan of these characters just because you can kind of play around with them a little bit more. So like a Dr. Midnight series, you could do what you want and tell the good story.
Right.
Do it, DC.
Yeah. So what Dr. Midnight does for the human target basically is going to protect Lex Luthor, which fucking shitty job, right? Because everyone hates Lex Luthor. And he gets poisoned instead of Lex getting poisoned. Dr. Midnight creates a pill for him to last 12 days because they can't figure out what this poison is. So that's his job. And I thought a really funny scene was Dr. Midnight's like, we should call Batman. Batman will help you with this. And Human Target's like, no, I don't want to call Batman. It's like, what do you have against Batman? He can help you. Doesn't want to do that. He thinks he's a better detective, I guess.
Yeah.
Plus Batman's going to show up in this book eventually, it looks like.
Oh, he's got to, right?
Yeah, well, he's part of this particular Justice League.
Right, exactly.
I think this is such a cool, weird thing. So, like, in the comic, we learn that they trace back something in the poison to be, it's got these remnants of this dimension, this specific other world, that the only people who ever gone to that dimension and come back is this particular lineup of the Justice League International, with Fire and Ice and Guy Gardner and Captain Atom, the Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, who was the artist? He's Kevin Maguire.
And the Lorax, I see.
Yeah, the Lorax, yeah. I'm telling you, Justice League always does a lot of property damage. They didn't knock down a single tree while he was on the team.
Yeah.
What's that guy's name? Gnort?
I don't know.
You got me.
Oh, you guys are... Oh, you don't actually know that character. Yeah, that's no.
I just can't remember his name.
Yeah, Gnort, he's like a loser Green Lantern. He was like...
Right.
He somehow inherited his ring from his dad, and the Guardians thought he was so pathetic that they put him in the only sector in space that's uninhabited. Mm-hmm. And he's like a dumb idiot who ruins things. So, but he's still a Green Lantern, so they let him in the Justice League.
It was a comedy book, right? Predominantly, yes. Justice League International is a comedy book. So, but it's interesting that this isn't really a comedy book, but it is going to be heavily dealing with those characters.
Right. But like every one of these characters, except I guess for Gnort, have been in like non-comedy serious books.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe Booster Gold. Booster Gold's always, everything he shows up in is kind of like,
I hate Booster absurd. Gold.
Yeah, maybe he's not in this.
Please don't let him be in this.
Okay, but yeah, I do have to ask you, as this is one of your favorite characters, where do you rank this particular Black Canary costume?
Very low.
I would think so. It's not very good.
No.
Is that her all the way on the right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, she looks like Sarah Connor or something. But like, not as cool.
No.
I mean, back in the day, that would have been pretty dope casting for Black Canary.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sure. I would have enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good issue.
I never liked this. Yeah, it's. I mean, people have been shitting on Tom King lately, I think, because I think that they think he kind of only has one move. But like, so do a lot of people, and it's really good. So leave us alone. We're enjoying this.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. And I mean, let me repeat, it looks amazing. Mm-hmm. Like,
God, yes.
I mean, the writing is good, like, but the art is like pretty transcendent stuff. It's pretty phenomenal, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Most of the panels don't have black outlines on the borders, which makes it look really like cool and cinematic.
Yeah, I do like that touch.
The scene with Luther is like, even though they just averted the tragedy, they just averted the disaster, it's still, everything still feels like really cool and tense because of the way it's staged. It's great.
Yeah. Thumbs up over here as well. All right, well, let's move on since we have a lot to get to. From Image, everything's sticking together. A couple weeks ago, we got What's the Furthest Place from Here? From friend of the store, Matthew Rosenberg and Tyler Boss. We will be interviewing these guys soon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And yeah, did I say from Image Comics? I think I did.
You did.
I did. Cool. So this is a post-apocalyptic coming of age story set in 1989.
Nice, good year.
Good year. Definitely has like suburbia vibes or the Warriors. It also takes place in a record store. I love this book. Yeah, I think it's also like a really fresh take on a post-apocalyptic world. It's not just like a, you know, science fiction or anything like that. It's, you know, I thought it was like really creepy, kind of like Neverlandish as well.
Yeah, we don't get a lot or much of anything of what's going on with the greater world, which I like. Also, they throw you right in. There's always that like thing with a different, like a fantasy world or something where it's like, we have to explain what happened. And it's like, there's no explanation here given whatsoever. The only thing we're hinting at is that there's these like, what are they called? The strangers?
Yeah. Yeah. Really weird, creepy characters that we only see for one panel.
Yeah, so it's like, we don't know what's going on. We just know something happened. And does it matter, you know?
No, yeah, we just see that there's kind of like factions or gangs, basically. We have like this gang of kids that are trapped in this record store and that there's no adults allowed, right? I'm not sure if like once you're an adult, you just have to move out. You just get kicked out of the gang.
That seems like that's what happened to Slug. Like
he left. Yeah, but like,
and then when he came back, he was an adult. Right. So,
but he wasn't supposed to come back.
Yeah, right. Or they just didn't know what happened to him. And then like, but once he came back, they're like, we gotta let him in. It's Slug, right? He's our friend. But once he got back, he got shot. So yeah, but then so once they go outside, they have like they meet these like weird pig faced or like pig masked. And they start like a war with them, but
they're not grown ups, right? They're kids too, right?
I thought they were. Are they kids?
Yeah, because they're like, you broke the rule. You have an adult.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if they were like teens or adults. That was a thing.
It seems like everyone gets like banished or something. I mean,
they are dressed very formally, like they're wearing like suits and ties. So as opposed to the people that we're following. So I think you could be, that's a logical reason to think, oh, they must be older, but I think they just dress
nice. And like one of them had a baby too, like strapped to their chest. I don't know. But then the other girl's pregnant too, which I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, they're all kids. Obviously, they've never been taught like protection or anything like
right.
that.
You know? Also, I don't know if those things come into play when the human race is dwindled down to who knows how many, right?
Right.
Right.
It's like, we need everyone we can get.
True.
Yeah, I mean, aside, like, I couldn't quite, like, the fact that they do just throw you in makes this really interesting, to the effect where I'm pretty sure that, like, as the issues were on, we'll get a better sense of, like, what this universe actually looks like. I don't see where it's clarified that it takes place in 1989.
Yeah. I believe I have the insight to that my special edition of the book that I have, where he actually says it takes place in 1989.
Oh, okay. Yeah, or maybe there's an interview thing at the end that I didn't read, so maybe that's in there.
Yeah, he says it right here. It takes place in 1989.
Oh, okay.
I think, yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Yeah, I wrote it down.
I just watched Wayne's World last night, and I'm like, and then I read this, and I'm like, Penelope Spheeris should direct the movie. Hell yeah. It's got all the music stuff. I think she'd do a good job. She did Suburbia, you know?
Oh, yeah, here it says, what's the furthest place from here is an ongoing post-apocalyptic coming-of-age story about gangs of children trying to survive after the world ended in 1989. There you go.
Okay. Oh, it ended in 1989.
Ended, yes. Well, I mean.
So it could be later, then. It could be now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this entire day could take place on the same day that Wayne's World was released in theaters in 1992. We don't know.
It could be. It's possible. That is canon now.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this on the interview.
Right.
Yeah, we'll definitely only Wayne's ask World him place. When does right. this actually take place. I mean, from yeah. their clothes and everything, it could be any time, really. Could be
1989. Well, I mean, if the culture died in 1989, then
right.
like what that evolves into could be anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's what happened in the Fallout video games. The apocalypse happened in the 50s. And so now right. the 50s sort of aesthetic is carried over into the later decades.
Yeah. How hellish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why does it have to be all these, like, the 50s, the 80s, the very, like, America is right.
Right. Yeah.
Give me the 90s apocalypse.
Nah, I don't want that.
Just big t-shirts.
Exactly. That's why I don't want that. I don't want that fashion to live out. It's happening again right now. It is the apocalypse. Yeah.
70s then. Give me the 70s. Early mustaches. Cool 70s apocalypse.
We'll take that.
Yeah, how do they feather their hair in the apocalypse? I want to know.
The blow dryers don't work. Yeah, even like some of their haircuts in this, I'm like, how are they getting it so coiffed? There's no
egg whites. Yeah.
How are they still dyeing their hair so effectively?
Yeah.
Good question. They're just raiding those Sally's beauties still.
Right.
Who else is all those questions. All
guys, we don't have enough drinking water because Polly used it to dye her mohawk again.
So two thumbs up for what's the furthest place from here. Any more questions, comments, concerns?
I liked it. I thought it was cool. I don't know.
I liked the music aspect and how they talk about it briefly about how, like, I forget how they phrase it, but like they choose albums as their like representative of their being.
Yeah.
And it's like, and she like chooses Hall and Oates, and he's like, what are you doing? Like, yeah. You only get one chance. Like, basically, right. like, your music taste is bad. You're not enjoying things how I'm like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
But I do like that when the guy like dies, they burn his Husker Du album.
Right. Yeah. I like that too. They're gatekeeping still after the apocalypse.
Oh,
yeah.
There would it be so much end. Gatekeeping.
Yeah.
Oh, there'd be more gatekeeping in an apocalypse. People would be like, oh, we can eliminate the knowledge of Taylor Swift from the world now. We're going to gatekeep the fuck out of people.
Well, it's 1989, so no Swifty yet. She wasn't even born yet.
But her album is called 1989.
Oh, there is. There
and he does reference Taylor Swift in the back of the book.
Oh.
As instrumental rock. Which I was like, is that what she is? What?
No, she sings, so.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of her songs now are like 15 minutes long, so there's probably a bit less vocals.
Jesus Christ, really?
Yeah, whoa. Did you see her performance on SNL last week? She did a 10-minute version of a song that was originally 4.
Oh.
Jesus. Wow, she's evolving.
It was good. I liked it a lot. I thought it was very cool. It had a short film playing behind her that went along with it, yeah, with the dude from Teen Wolf and one of the girls from Stranger Things.
Dylan?
Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, it was Michael J. Fox. No, it was Jason Bateman. Teen Wolf 2, sorry.
Teen Wolf? Oh, Teen Wolf 2.
Dylan.
No, the Dylan show? Something.
Dylan. Huh? Was it Dylan? What's his last name?
I don't remember, but it was Dylan, yeah.
Okay.
The main dude, yeah. And then
the only one I know.
The actress, Sadie Sink, who plays Max on Stranger Things.
Oh, okay.
And it's essentially the two of them reenacting Taylor Swift's relationship with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, wow. Cool.
But she's gone Prague, is what you
think. Oh, is that why everyone hates Jake Gyllenhaal right now?
That's why, yes.
Oh, okay. I was wondering what he did, but I didn't feel like looking it up.
Yeah. I mean, hey, watch the 10-minute SNL performance. It's a bit of a bop, and also you'll get fully caught up. There was a scarf involved. I don't know. I'm on my phone during that part of SNL.
Oh.
Well, that was What's the Furthest Place from Here.
Yeah. What are we doing next? Robin and Batman?
Yes, that is next. Robin and Batman, written
the
by...
The dynamic team of Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen.
Exactly. Thank you. The artist has done everything. Dustin Nguyen did the colors, layouts, all of that stuff. Because he is a watercolor expert. And it's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
I have a real hard time saying Robin and Batman. And I feel really bad about that, Robins, all of you. I'm very sorry. It should be Batman and Robin. But I know he's the main protagonist in this comic. But it's really hard.
He's the lead.
He's the lead. I know.
I mean, we've seen enough. I mean, the story of Batman, of Bruce Wayne adopting Dick Grayson, of like the origins of Robin, mm-hmm, has been told dozens of times in of different iterations of comics, and most of the time from Dick Grayson's perspective. But this feels like cool and not like this is a, I would say that this is a very good entry level Batman comic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's about a classic story with some cool different twists. And also, it essentially says the thing that has always made the most sense to me is that Batman, at least at this time around, should be kind of a shitty dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, Alfred's the real hero in this issue.
Definitely. Yeah. I also
Alfred calls him out just like, boom, boom, boom. Like, oh, man. Because the whole thing about he needs to be more than a child. He needs to be a soldier. And he's like, so you can have a dead soldier on your doorstep, not a dead child. Got it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And Jeff Lemire just knows how to write about like lost loved ones and failing mm-hmm relationships too. That's like his specialty. He's like, I know how to make you sad. Here's this comic. Even if it's about Batman and Robin or Robin and Batman, he just knows how to pull at all of your heartstrings. And even the stuff with Killer Croc that we get is so sad. And just like the emotion mm-hmm you see on Killer Croc's face. I don't think I've ever seen that type of emotion before drawn on one of the rogues of Batman, you know?
Mr. Freeze is genuinely a tragic, very tragic figure. Often, I mean, they're all kind of tragic, but yeah, you rarely feel it because you're like, mm-hmm, yeah, Two-Face is tragic, but I'm not like, oh, poor Two-Face,
right?
You know, but it is tragic, right? I mean,
of course,
world is seeped in that.
I'd say that Mr. Freeze's tragedy is like you're kind of rooting for him a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone else is like, hey, maybe don't do anything. And that's the real solution here.
Yeah. Just sit down.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to lock him back up.
Yeah.
Right. Because, yeah, they all.
I think this is the first time, at least that I'm aware of, that they decided to tie Killer Croc into Dick Grayson's origin and have him be a circus freak. That's genius. That's really slick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he knew the outfit immediately.
Yeah.
He's like, where'd you get that outfit? Like immediately he's like, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
I also like that he wanted a bright red and yellow green suit because it would piss Bruce off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to remember if Killer Croc had been in that situation before too. It felt very familiar, but maybe I was thinking of another villain that had been part of that.
They have had other characters who like used to work at the same circus as the Graysons or whatever.
Yeah.
Or were somehow tied to Dick before he became Robin. But like, this is the, I mean, the having it be, it's a circus, so many things can happen, come out of a circus. Like the fact that no one that I know of, and I don't want this to happen, but no one's tied the Joker being a clown to Robin being a circus performer.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, that
now
would
it's
suck.
Gonna happen. It's out there now. No, that'd be terrible. That'd be a terrible idea.
That'd be so awful. Yes. But like there's, and I'd say like, yeah, freak show. And also the fact that Killer Croc is a big dumb dummy. So having this like kind of idiot, no Batman secret identity rules.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Or maybe he's not there yet, but he will be.
Right. Yeah. It's only a matter of time.
Well, he'll definitely know Robin's secret identity for sure.
Right. And then, you know, he sees in the news, Bruce Wayne adopts young Ward. He'll be like, ah, that's it.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
He read his diary.
Say,
oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah. That's really. I wanted to say something that's not really about this comic, but about the Batman Robin relationship. But yeah, he read. Yeah, that's really fucked up. Like, I don't know that any iteration of Batman I've ever read has done something so like, dude, you knew that that's a shitty thing to do.
Oh yeah, but I can totally see him doing that too, because he's a detective and he has to know everything and. That's kind of his shitty prerogative, right? Like, that's what, it didn't surprise me that he would do that at all.
Okay, yeah.
There's no secrets between us.
Exactly. I was like, ugh.
Okay, gaslighter. Okay. Right? Jeez, Gotham by gaslight much. That's really, we should redo that story. You just gaslight everyone I'm not wearing around. Costume. Yeah.
That's why he's so alone.
My parents are alive. You just never met them.
Yeah, he gaslit Bob Kane to write it that way. He's like, no, my parents are fine, but yeah.
There's one thing I want to very lightly touch on, and this is a bit of a spoiler for a Nerd Rage episode that's coming out. But I was talking to Stephen Koo on Nerd Rage, and he talked about how in the film Batman Forever, after Dick Grayson's parents are killed, Bruce Wayne, Val Kilmer adopts Chris O'Donnell, Robin. Do you know how old Chris O'Donnell was when they made that movie?
27.
He was 27 years old.
yeah, like,
like people have full careers. It's not so much an adoption, it's just like you could move in.
Yeah, he had a roommate.
You can crash here.
He found a new roommate.
Right.
But please draw up official adoption papers. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, that is one of the many reasons why I hated that so much. It made no sense at all. And then kills, but you know.
As much as I like this comic, I do need to put this weird thing out there that to me feels odd now. So Robin is a name that Dick's mom called him. Uh-huh. And then when he stops being Robin, Batman keeps calling kids Robin. That's weird.
Yeah. That we talk about that in this comic that he was called Robin.
Yeah.
His mom. It was he because he's like trying to figure out a name for himself.
Right.
And he's like, it can't be Bat Boy because I don't want something that's tied to my age. It has to be able to live. And then he's like, maybe it should be Nightwing. But my mom used to call me Robin, so maybe I should be Robin. But then it's like, okay, so you've graduated Robin High School, and now this next kid's going to be called Robin. And then Dick's like, wait a second, dude, like my mom called me that. Like, that's my mom's nickname for me. You're calling all these little boys Robin now? Like, what?
Your son? You don't want to come up with a nickname for your own son?
Yeah, they didn't really think that through. And the costume too was his costume from the flying gray
that his parents also probably made,
right?
Yeah,
so Batman just like stole his legacy and gave it to some other kids.
You know, now that I'm looking at it, it is pretty reckless that he's like, hey, you know how you were like a famous trapeze performer? What if you were that exact where you performed under your legal last name? What if we just put a mask on it and hope no one noticed?
Yes.
It's definitely strange.
Yeah.
Because he has a lot of smart guys that are villains that, you know, he goes after. Nobody put that together.
Just Killer Croc.
Yeah. Just Killer Croc.
Just Killer Croc.
Genius detective Killer Croc.
Batman villains aren't exactly the circus going type, which is insane because one of them's a clown.
True. They were all locked up a lot.
Yeah, that's
true. Riddler couldn't figure it out though. Really? Yeah. The Riddler.
The calculator, all that dude does is go on the internet.
Hugo Strange couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Calendar Man would know the date of every single performance of the Graysons. He could just sit there and list it.
All right. Well, we broke that down.
Still enjoyable, despite still enjoyable, the fridge logic we're bringing to this right now. Like, still very enjoyable.
I mean, look, if it was in the newspaper that young Bruce Wayne fell in a bat cave when he was a boy, then probably more villains would have put that together. But that didn't happen. This is so much more blatant.
Yes, absolutely. All right, moving on. Let's get to The Thing by Walter Mosley, Tom Riley, and Jordy Belair. Walter Mosley is a famous crime writer, most famously probably for Devil in a Blue Dress, which was also made into a motion picture, major motion picture, starring Denzel Washington, which is a great movie. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure you can stream it somewhere. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. I remember seeing it in theaters, but it's probably worth a rewatch for sure.
I like that it's set back in the past, probably because Walter Mosley's like, listen, I'm not going to get into whatever the hell you got going on now. Oh, it can be set. It can be set when I was a kid. Like,
right.
I like when they allow, it's not always, you know, sometimes it seems like they make them stick with the modern continuity, but I do like when you can set the story whenever there's such a rich history, just like Robin and Batman, you know, right. That's mm-hmm. when Jeff Lemire wanted to write. He didn't want to write about Huntress and Damian Wayne and
you have to tie everything in. Yeah, just like, no, I want the basic, like, we've got this, like, well, maybe three villains at this point, here's Robin, let's go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Tom Riley, do you guys know Tom Riley's art much? Because I opened this book and I was like, holy shit, this art is so good.
Yeah, yeah, I like this great. A lot.
Yeah.
Plus Jordy Belair coloring just amazing, but
so good.
But it works great together. It's super solid.
Yeah. And on first read, I was a little confused about this book, but I read it again and it kind of cleared some things up. Maybe this is Walter Mosley's first attempt at a comic. So some storytelling things kind of didn't go well at first, but
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Seems like there was like five things going on at once that just sort of flew and bled into each other and then disappeared. And yeah.
Yeah. And
like, also the whole, like, how Alicia Masters was characterized is like very early 2000s romantic comedy, where it's like no normal human would like the way that chain of events occurred, where it's like she's walking down the street with this guy Alejandro Vasquez, and then, like, you know, Ben's a jerk about it, right? But then, like, that guy maces him, and then he just leads her away, and she doesn't, like, be like, no, what's going on? Like,
right. Yeah.
And then the next time they see each other, she's like, we should see other people. I'm like, this is a 2000s romantic comedy characterization. Alicia deserves better.
Yes. It was very strange. I was like, Alicia would never act that way, especially if that guy maced Ben. Like,
yeah, no, she'd be pissed, as you would be. Like, I don't care if you're having a fight with your boyfriend. Like, if some dude, some art dealer maced your boyfriend, you'd be like, what the fuck? Yeah. You're like, what the fuck, dude? He's in a rage. He's in a rage. We have to go.
Right. Because he wasn't really doing anything that bad, honestly.
No.
He destroyed a car.
Yeah, I mean, he did destroy a car, for sure. But that was after he got maced.
Yeah. Yeah. and also, it's not like the Fantastic Four are famous. Like, you think this guy walks up to you and you're like, oh, I'm just gonna, oh, well, clearly this man is unhinged. He's a horrible beast, and I have to take care of this myself. It's not the guy who punched Galactus. I am the one who needs to take charge here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do like Hercules in the Drunk Tank.
Yes, Hercules.
That was amusing.
Was awesome,
and it was kind of a nice little, almost Marvel 2-in-1 nod. The Thing teams up with people a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. How watch The Thing and Hercules escape from a maximum security prison.
Yeah.
And in the beginning too, so we get like a new antagonist, like this Grim Reaper looking villain, and I didn't really get what was happening with the the guy he attacks, there's like a poster on his wall of this like famous, we get like singer, which we have no idea who she is. And there's
no, that's a Merlius de jure, the one he goes on the date with at the end.
Right. Yeah.
I got that. But later. We don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know yet in the beginning though. Yeah, there's also like a woman outside too. And I was like, is that the woman that was outside? Like,
yeah, it was a little weird at first.
Yeah. So like all of that took a little bit to clear up. And then the guy like steals his heart, the Grim Reaper guy steals his heart. And I was like, okay. I thought that the whole little story in the beginning was very unclear of what was going on. But like I said, on the second read, I was like, oh, okay. Cause they, once he steals his heart, he turns him into another villain, I guess. Right.
The guy with tires on his hands.
Right. For some reason.
Like that's going to work.
Yeah. A big, strong, tire wielding guy.
I mean, he looks like the fifth member of the Wrecking Crew.
Sure. Yeah.
Super basic costume. Instead of a crowbar or a wrecking ball, it's just tires.
Yeah. Which I thought could have been better as well. Like he could have had a bit more of a design to him.
Yeah. This whole comic does definitely seem like it's, I didn't know that this was a novelist coming in. And it does seem like this is like, it was probably written as a larger story and we're getting it segmented rather than writing individual issues as their own things that build to a larger narrative. This does kind of like, this is that sort of sin that people complain about Marvel Comics where it's like, well, what happened? Like, where are we going? It's like, it didn't even get to the, you know, the fight at the end thing.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, there's some very cool parts in this comic. It's just, maybe it needed another rewrite over probably, or a little more editing, something.
Yeah, there is cool stuff. I like the idea of this guy who steals hearts and then seems to taint their heart in a way, mm-hmm. and then replace it, like put it back, but like it's almost like he's possessing their heart or something.
Yeah.
And then this leads to this like glimpses that Ben is getting of, well, because it happens to Ben, and then he starts seeing these like dark images of, like, you know, that double page spread is pretty incredible with like Galactus and the Celestials and mm-hmm. Infinity all like dead. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool stuff.
It is really cool, but it doesn't really explain why he's seeing that either.
No.
Yeah. No. So, and maybe we'll get more of that later. I don't know.
And then he joins like a super futuristic dating app, basically, right?
Right. Right. Because
Alicia's like, you got maced. We're on a break now.
Yeah. And again, very uncharacteristically, Ben joins a dating app, I guess because his heart was tainted. And he's like, sure, why not? I'm going to join this weird dating app that this pixie told me to do. Because like this weird pixie creature comes out of nowhere. And tells
we're getting Walter Mosley's opinion of dating apps.
Yes.
He's like, some weird pixie told me. And it's like, my heart's not tainted. I'm not going to do that.
I did think it was kind of odd that it's like, so this pixie appears to like only certain types of people, and it would make sense, like some sort of between across all of time and space, interdimensions, I try to link people up with each other, and she like flies into his TV and she's like, you're the perfect person for this sort of project. And then who did she link him up with? A human choreographer in the same city. Yeah. Like, I don't know, that feels a bit underwhelming.
Yeah. It, maybe she did that to protect her, or the woman, against this other guy.
Oh, maybe it's not really a dating service. It's more of like
a protection
cosmic service? Protection organization. Yeah.
Or a purpose. Maybe it's more purpose based. Like,
yeah.
Because, I mean, Alicia and Ben are going to be together.
Right.
Right. I mean, like, that we kind of know that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is like, and like, I mean, this is all of us flushing all of this out, right? So we shouldn't have to do this, for this comic, which is unfortunate. Like I said, I wanted more out of this. So we'll see. I might skim through issue 2. I might not. Who knows?
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, not to like knock him, you know, it's like writing for comics is very different. And if this is this guy's, if he's a, you know, big writer, like writes all the time, but doesn't write for comics. It is a different, it's a difficult thing, the different transfer, you know?
Yeah.
Nikki's written like 47 crime novels.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
like, then I want to read this guy's crime novels.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Why is he getting into comics with The Thing and not with, like, I don't know, fucking Daredevil or like,
I have no idea. Maybe he loves The Thing.
Maybe. And maybe he wants to write things outside of his wheelhouse, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's written a few like Afro sci-fi like novels as well.
Okay.
Maybe he just loves The Thing.
Who doesn't?
I know. Who doesn't? I love The Thing. That's why I'm so curious.
The miniseries, or actually, I think this is supposed to be ongoing. It just got canceled. That Dan Slott did a number of years ago, where the first arc was Thing goes to murder world with a bunch of people.
Oh,
it's an Arcade story. I love the hell out of the story, and I think Arcade's a stupid character that sucks. So,
yeah. Hey, I love Arcade.
I mean the settings are super cool, but like it doesn't make any sense. I'll pay you $1 million to kill this superhero in your cartoon maze with like jack-in-the-boxes and slot machines and shit. What's your record? Oh, I've never killed anyone successfully. Yeah, everyone always
he always fails.
It's so stupid.
So dumb.
Joker Archie.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. All right, and lastly, we'll do just a quick rundown of Darkhold Wasp, which came out this week, written by Jordi Belair and drawn by Claire Rowe.
Colorist by Jordi Belair.
Oh yes, and colored by Jordi Belair.
Super cool.
Jordi Belair has written one of my favorite horror comics, Redlands, which if you come into our store, I will always recommend to you. Still has not finished. Jordi, when are you going to get back to Jordi? When are you going to get back to Redlands? I just want it to finish. I loved this comic. It's just like a single, you know, one shot issue, I think.
You haven't read any of the Darkhold. I don't know what the hell's going on in Darkhold. They tell you in one sentence, her and four other heroes read from some evil book to try and save the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they read from the Darkhold in an attempt to stop the Elder God Chthon from manifesting on Earth. And then it created a sinister side of their personalities. It's like, that's all you need to know. And this is just Janet interacting with her husband and being an Avenger.
Yeah. Can we also just say Chthon, like Cthulhu? Really dumb. I just want to say for that name. Really quick.
That could be it could be an actual Lovecraft thing for all I know.
Yeah,
you know?
I have no idea what he looks like.
Doesn't mean it's not dumb.
It's stupid. It's a stupid name. Okay. I just had to say.
Did you say C-H, is it C-H-T-H-O-N?
It is, yes.
That's a character. That's a really old Marvel character.
Is it?
There you go.
Yeah, hold on. I'm pulling it up. Because I'm like, that sounds super familiar. And I was like, is that an actual Lovecraftian thing?
Because it says Elder God Chthon, and I was like Elder God Cthulhu.
So essentially, in the same way that I was going to say the same with like Dracula is, but actually Marvel does use Dracula. He's basically the Cthulhu of the Marvel universe, and first appeared as the other in 1975, and as himself Chthon in 1979. So this isn't like Jordi Belair's fault.
Oh no, I wasn't saying it was her fault, because it was already thought up in the Darkhold thing.
Yeah.
It's also not a 2021 decision. This is an established, I'm not saying it's a good name.
Oh, no.
But
in the 70s, it was also stupid.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we can't use Cthulhu because it's a Lovecraft thing. We'll make our own Chthon Elder God.
Also, Lovecraft, I think it's public domain now.
It is.
I don't know if it was, I guess it probably wasn't in the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is like a alt, you know, world story of what if story, basically. What if Janet Van Dyne fought back, with Hank Pym abusing her? And it's like pretty deep. Like Jordi like gets in there, I felt things while reading this comic, like it's a survivor story, really. And at the end, it's no hold barred, like what she does. And I was like, I was rooting for her the whole time. And I was like, can this just be canon? Like, honestly,
It's pretty badass.
It's fucking badass. And, you know, I'm not really for murder most of the time, but
yeah. I mean, I will say this is my favorite we read this week, just because it worked so well to me as a standalone thing. All the other ones are like, I'm like, okay, what's the rest of the story? And this one, I don't need anything else. I don't want to see the universe where Janet did this. Like, I don't care. Like, it's all in this issue. And it's, super cool. Just a cool standalone story. Do we want to spoil it for people? I mean, it's pretty badass, regardless of if you know.
Yeah, regardless of what you know, what happens. I will just say, we don't have to, like, spoil the whole thing. But it starts off, you know, with Janet fighting Kang, and Pym is not there. And Kang kind of like puts a seed into her head, you know, of telling
you're so free without him.
Yeah, you'll be free without him.
He holds you back.
Yeah. Like, I know, and like kind of like saying, like, I know what he does to you. And then it's like her serving, you know, lunch to Pym while he's, you know, doing his experiments. And you kind of just see him picking at her, like, the whole issue. You know,
I'm busy. Do you need something right now? Quote. like just like, leave me alone. Like, he's just very despicable. Like, the depiction of Hank in this is pretty gross.
I mean, but it's true too. Like, you saw it in all the other Avengers issues too at this time, like what he does to her. And mostly in those issues too, it was just the Avengers fighting her fight. It wasn't her fighting back. And in this one, you see her finally fighting back. And you have
one other.
She has a relationship with Pepper, and like they have a conversation about it. Then her with Tigra, and they're talking about it as well. And you just see her like starting to build something, or just like, you know, what is she gonna do? How is she gonna feel if she could finally fight this fight?
Yeah,
and then it's very powerful.
It was. It really was. And one other thing, I just liked how it starts. Male wasps are utterly useless, and she like explains the science of that. And I just like the idea that like she's not the Lady Ant-Man, right? Which is what she was probably conceived as, right? Like Stan, you know, thinking of, oh yeah, the lady, right? It's like, no, he's the male wasp, and he's useless. Mm-hmm. It's just pretty funny.
It is, yeah.
One thing that I loved in the Ultimate Comics, the Mark Millar Ultimate series, was they established that in that universe, Wasp is a mutant, and the only reason who can naturally shrink and grow the wings, and the only reason that Hank could develop the Pym particles is because he knew her. Without her, he wouldn't have been able to do any of it. And so I love the idea of their origins being like intrinsically linked, because he makes these things that can shrink people, but why does she grow wings? Why does she have the venom blasts? All he can do is shrink, and she can do what he does plus other stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So the idea of her being like the superior version of Pym, or being a necessary aspect of Hank Pym's scientific discovery, is really cool and interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. Plus she has led the Avengers the most, second only to Captain America.
Yep.
Like over a decade, she was like leader of the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or close to a decade, maybe.
Yeah. This was also my pick of the week as well. And I want to actually, I'm going to definitely tweet to Jordi Belair and tell her thank you for writing this, because it was so great.
Yeah, definitely interesting stuff that I did not expect. I mean, I was like, okay, the art's cool, and then this is going to be just like some random Marvel comic. I was, you know, that's the best type of comic, when I'm like, oh wow, I had no expectations, and now I'm like kind of blown away.
Yeah, well, after reading Redlands, that's the kind of like story that she writes, you know. Like after flipping through it real quick, I was like, oh, this is not going to be like a normal Marvel issue, you know. She just writes those super powerful like female protagonists that are just like, fuck this, I'm writing my own story.
I also love the idea of a writer colorist, you know. It's like, start the story, then finish the story, you know, like your final coloring is the final touches. And it's like, that must be an interesting thing for her, because her coloring is always in service of the story, but it's now it's in service of her own story.
Right.
So she knew what she meant, you know, like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, pretty cool.
All right. That's all of our comic reviews. Whew, that was a lot.
Yeah.
Let's get to some news. Switch gears. And who's seen Eternals? Anybody yet?
No.
I'm the only one?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh my God, you guys. All right. Well, I'm not going to spoil the movie or anything, but we are going to get into some fan theories about it without spoilers, really. So there's a big theory going around that Eternals is leading the X-Men into the universe.
Oh.
Have you guys heard about this?
I have not.
I feel like that rumor comes about every two years or so.
Every movie?
Yeah, like, Doctor Strange, because he can go to different dimensions. They're going to, WandaVision, the fact that Quicksilver's in it, that's going to lead it. Like, it's
Shang-Chi can punch through walls. He's going to punch through the wall into the X-Men universe.
Right, yeah. I mean, even going back to, like, I mean, I think the earliest one being Age of Ultron, because that had mutants. Now they're not mutants anymore. And they're like, oh, that's going to lead to Magneto. That's going to lead to, like, so I think that I'm on record as saying this. I think that the X-Men should not be a part of the MCU because the existence of mutants, I think, would completely disrupt what the MCU has already cultivated. I think the X-Men are, this is a hot take, more interesting removed from, as cinematically speaking, more interesting in their own little space where mutants are the only thing in that world. So if you can't be happy until you see Wolverine and Spider-Man hang out in a major motion picture, I don't know. Read more comics, I guess.
Well, okay. Sure, but
I'm not saying this to you. I'm saying this to like fans who are like X-Men. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you know about Star Fox, right?
Well, yes. I've heard things, and yeah, I plan to see the movie. I just haven't had time.
But, right, well, but, I won't tell you all about that or anything. But all right, in the comics, the genetic experiments of the Celestials on early hominids created the X gene in humanity. Right? We know about that. Mm. Okay. Even though they don't do the experiments on early humans per se, they did create life on this world. This is the Celestials. So they could have planted the dormant X gene in humanities. So they're saying basically the Celestials now like have awoken in the Marvel Universe, in the MCU. So basically that's what like started the mutant gene. Are you with me still?
Sure, yeah.
Right. So Tiamat is the Celestial in Eternals. So if he was like reawakening in the Eternals, slowly it's been like leaking throughout our Earth for a very long time now in the Marvel Universe. So they think that the X gene has been like slowly awakening throughout all of time. And so the mutants are going to just start like popping up in the MCU. This is the theory. What do you
think? It's just such a weird concept, right?
Yeah.
If they aren't there from the beginning, it's like, so Namor's like a new guy, like Apocalypse, like new dude.
Well, that's like, the thing. It works though, because then like he suddenly reawakes now and it just like explodes. And now it can like awaken them all at once. I don't know.
I bet that Apocalypse is a valid point, but also I feel like they just, after the failure of that movie, they just, we're just not going to do Apocalypse again. We'll just say that Apocalypse doesn't exist. Namor, I mean, I guess that, I mean, is he, I mean, I know he is a mutant, but like, isn't he also like a man fish, like Aquaman? Like half of a 50-50, a hybrid?
No. No.
What?
Right? He's half fish.
Isn't he half Atlantean?
He is an Atlantean. Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I guess that could kind of be separate from mutant in a way, like in the same way that, like, yeah. But really, the thing for me is that I don't want a Wolverine that isn't over 100 years old.
That's true. Well, that could be the thing, though. So, Wolverine could still be there because if it was like slowly leaking, he could have just been like dormant for like a while.
Yeah, and then post snap maybe like things accelerated now there's a shitload of mutants.
Right.
There have always been there's been like, you know, a couple hundred around the world,
right?
That no one and that never met each other, you know. Mm-hmm. And now they're coming out of Mark's letter. That's all right.
It does need that like ancient past. Like there needs mm-hmm. to be that like these roots where it's like mutantdom has been slowly rising, and then it's like from the birth of the, you know, when humans harnessed the atom is sort of when it exploded. But it's like they've been here, and it's like I guess you could propose that there has been a few, you know, yeah. here and there. Yeah, like you said, like under 100 of them through history. Yeah. And then it's like all of a sudden, boom, now there's 10,000.
You know? Yeah.
Okay, like, now the world knows about them.
Yeah. And like Hulk snapping and like resetting everything kind of like just makes it a huge event now. And like all of them start popping up everywhere too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or and it could even be a thing where like Xavier and Magneto and Wolverine and a few others existed before.
Right.
And exactly. only and Xavier knew about the other ones because of course he would. Right. But and it was just like, all right, I'm gonna keep an eye on this, make sure that nothing pops up, but now it's uncontrollable. And so that's when he decides to open the school. You know, we could write a better story than what they're gonna do.
Yeah, exactly.
He could have hid them.
I thought that too.
Right?
Yeah.
He could have hid the knowledge of them from people.
Yeah.
P.S. That was the best thing about Eternals, was that. Sorry. That's my review of Eternals.
I'm still gonna see it, but I'm prioritizing Ghostbusters.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of Ghostbusters, I loved it. Definitely go see it. It was amazing.
I'm excited. I haven't seen it. I'm such a big Ghostbusters fan, but I've never, oh no, I did see the Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy one in theaters, but that's yeah. different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it on Friday on opening day.
Nice.
It was great. The kids, you know, the thing I was most scared about was like the kids being really annoying. And they weren't, they were all great. It was like so endearing. I just found myself like smiling throughout the entire movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some things I don't know. They did kind of like the Star Wars thing where they used a lot of stuff from the original, you know?
Yeah,
sure.
Which, you know, plays on your emotions too, because you're like, oh, I remember that. But
yeah,
I thought they could have done less of that. That would be my only thing.
Mm-hmm. Fan service is the new way, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Let's get into Spider-Man.
Garfield? Oh.
What?
Andrew Garfield? What?
Garfield? Oh, we could do that first if you want to do you don't want to talk about Spider-Man.
Oh, I do. This is just really brief. I didn't know this about this upcoming Garfield movie. It's on the first, it was announced, the 1st of November, it was announced that Chris Pratt would be voicing Garfield, which is bad casting because that's not his type. There's so many better people. I'd say nearly everyone else in the cast of Parks and Recreation would have done a better job voicing Garfield than Chris Pratt. Nick Offerman, Aubrey Plaza, fuck it, Aziz Ansari, who cares anymore?
Who does care?
Yeah, I just think that like Chris Pratt, just because he's like a big deal right now, also the fact that he's voicing Mario, I'm fucking sick of this dude. Also, uh-huh. We don't need another Garfield movie, but if we have to have one, I don't want it to be Nick Offerman. I mean, I do want it to be Nick Offerman. I don't want it to be Chris Pratt. But it's being written by David Reynolds and directed by Mark Dindal. The last time they worked together was on The Emperor's New Groove, which is a movie that I did enjoy. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I think that bodes well for whatever they're going to do with this. I think that the sort of like madcap, anything can happen, who cares energy that they took from like what was supposed to be a very serious Lion King like level of tone movie with because Emperor's New Groove was supposed to be a very different movie with a soundtrack by Sting and like a much more like respectful tribute to like South American mythology, uh-huh. and turned into like I'm David Spade, you know.
Well, it's gotta be better than Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. Well, like you listen to how Bill Murray did Garfield's voice, or back in the 80s, Lorenzo Music, and you're like, okay, well, obviously the next person is Chris Pratt. That's a terrible casting decision. But I will be probably seeing this movie at a dollar theater while tremendously drunk.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if I fall asleep, so be it.
Definitely less offended by the Garfield casting than the Mario casting.
Yeah.
Yes. The Mario casting is worse. But when they announced, I watched a Nintendo Direct live where when they announced who would be playing who. And at every announcement, I yelled at my screen, what the fuck is going on?
For Mario or Garfield?
For Mario. Yeah.
I was playing, oh my God, brain. Nope.
Princess Peach?
Yes.
Anya Taylor-Joy. That was the only time where I was like, okay. Sure. Yeah.
Works, yeah. But
Jack Black is Bowser. Mm-hmm.
Not bad.
Seth Rogen is Donkey Kong.
I like that.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Okay. I'm not gonna lie, that rules. Fred Armisen is Cranky Kong.
That's good too.
Keegan-Michael Key is Toad.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember. You know, I don't know if they announced Luigi. Now that I think about it,
who's Wario?
Wario's not in it.
Oh.
Although Sebastian Maniscalco, the comedian, is voicing Spike, who is an esoteric character from Wrecking Crew.
Right.
Which is like an 80s game that Mario was in. And a lot of people think that Spike became Waluigi. They kind of have similar character designs. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, is Waluigi secretly in the movie? Which I feel like if they wanted to put Waluigi in a movie, they wouldn't say it isn't Waluigi, you know?
Yeah. But Sebastian Maniscalco would be a great Waluigi.
Yeah, I do kind of hope that is what happens. Oh, like, Charlie Day is the voice of Luigi. That's
right. Yeah. I knew that too.
Yeah.
We're like, well, he's Italian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess. You know, anything like Day just screams Italian.
He is Italian, but.
I know.
Okay, cool.
I mean, doesn't have two Italian last names like me. Well, I should have been Mario. All right. Okay. We got to talk about Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah, we do. I did break my no trailers rule and I watched this trailer.
Yes. Okay. Good. Yeah. All right. So we have so many villains that joined our trailer. Still have not seen Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield, who have said they are not in the movie. Nobody believes them. I don't know, man. I'm starting to think they are not in the movie and I feel people are going to be very disappointed. However, in the trailer, we see Electro, Sandman.
Green Goblin.
What?
I said Green Goblin and he said Lizard.
Okay. Yeah. Green Goblin, Lizard, Doc Ock. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And then so in one of the scenes that like Sandman is like blowing something, and the lizard is like getting knocked out of the way, and you actually can see something being digitally cut out.
Yeah. The punch, right?
Yeah.
There's the big scene where they're all flying together, all the villains and the spider and Spider-Man, and you see the lizard and he gets clocked in the chin, right. But there's no one there.
Yeah.
There's just nothing there.
Right. And Sandman's actually blowing something too. You can see it. And like, yeah, there's nothing there. So two theories. It's one of the other Spider-Men. Or the third Spider-Man, it's Miles Morales, who has an invisible suit.
Oh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That could be cool. I mean,
it could be cool.
If they ever cast another Peter Parker, I'd say that's a mistake. Like, I don't mean ever, but like, that would be a mistake. Like, Tom Holland should be Miles's Peter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, and then let Miles, like, whenever Tom Holland's done, you know, like give us Miles and then give us Peter Parker again in, you know, 20 years, like,
right. When Tom Holland has said he's gonna be moving on,
good for
at
him.
Least from this storyline. I don't know if he's gonna be in any other Marvel movies, but this is the last, you know, of the trilogy of the No Way Home,
mm-hmm.
coming whatever home movies.
Yeah.
So Boss Logic the artist actually physically drew Miles Morales into the frames. So you can actually see Miles Morales if you want to look that up. It's on Boss Logic. I think it's just at Boss Logic on Twitter. He does a lot of comic covers too. It looks pretty good. I don't know. It definitely looks like a Spider-Man is in that little frame that they cut out. So
can I bring something else up from the trailer?
Yeah, of course.
How they make fun of Otto Octavius's name.
Oh god.
In the same universe where he's friends with Pepper Potts and Happy Hogan.
Right. Yeah. I agree completely. Or everybody's names.
Like, yeah.
And Stephen like Strange. Otto Octavius,
that's a bridge too far. That's too far.
I know. Yeah. I thought that was so dumb as well.
One thing that I liked, so they had this huge like screening event where they invited like fans and everything to go like watch the trailer debut live, and then the trailer dropped on the internet like an hour later. But if you wanted to see it, honestly, that seems like a kind of cool thing. I remember I did that the last time a third Spider-Man movie came out. I went to WonderCon and I was really excited to see the Spider-Man 3 trailer. But they showed the live reactions from the trailer, and it's everybody cheering and clapping and everything, whenever anything cool happens. When they got to that joke, silence. No one in the room thought it was funny. And that rules. It's on record being like, we don't like it.
Also from that event, is that the event you're talking about when Tom Holland was there and they were like showing it with Kevin Feige?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Okay. So they also had 3 posters up in front of it, and people are also saying, oh, there's 3 Spider-Men, so there's going to be 3 Spider-Men in the movie as well. That's another theory that's flying around. I just think people are really stretching for that. There's going to be 3 Spider-Men, but maybe that's another hint that they wanted to drop. I don't know.
Well, how funny would it be if specifically these films is Marvel produces them, but Sony is in charge of all the marketing, which... If you look back through the history of the trailers, like, they're not as good at the trailer game as Marvel.
Right.
So, like, that's when, you know, you had the, like, blatant, like, oh, this Spider-Man trailer just has Iron Man. You're like, what the fuck? Like, I remember being like, what the fuck? He's just going to, like, dominate the movie? And then you saw the movie and it's good, right? But their marketing is very different than the very close to the vest that Marvel does. And I almost feel like there was some sort of talk or something where they wanted to put the Tobys in there. Someone probably wanted to, and then someone was like, no, we have enough, or some. I feel like there's some behind the scenes back and forth going on there, because it is 2 companies doing this, and it, like, traditionally Sony would be in charge of it, but maybe Marvel still has a voice in that or something.
Maybe. Or it's just, I mean, people have been dying to know what's going to be in this movie for so long, and they just want to keep it secret. Or they're not in it. Who knows? There's also that black Spider-Man costume, too, with the gold and stuff. And they haven't actually showed him take off his mask with wearing that costume. That might not even be him in that costume, either. Also, I don't think any of us saw the new Venom movie, right?
No, not yet.
No. Apparently, there is a cut scene at the end of the Venom movie where he enters the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
So that could be something.
Wait, it's not in the final edit?
It is in the final edit. I'm sorry. It's just the end scene.
The post-credits. Okay.
The post-credit scene, yeah. The very end of the movie. So Tom Hardy actually is now in the Marvel universe.
All right.
Yeah.
It was told to me by our good friend Sherwin. he was like, do you care? And I was like, just tell me. Like, I know they hinted at it. The internet can't hide stuff. I guess he's watching, it's Tom Hardy watching TV with Venom, and his face comes on screen as like Spider-Man. Like, the identity of Spider-Man has been revealed.
Now, okay.
You're getting this like fourth telephone down the line, so
I just read an article briefly because I was like, oh, I don't want to spoil Venom for myself. Like, I care about Venom.
Yeah.
I mean, I am
kind of stoked to see the Morbius movie, because that looks like it's gonna be a train wreck, but
I don't know, the last trailer I saw looked better than some of the other movies. His effects look really good, at least.
Maybe. I just want a weird movie.
I just want a weird one, too. I just like vampires.
I just rewatched the episode of the Spider-Man 90s animated series, the first appearance of Morbius, and like how he, like, it's so, the fact that they couldn't have him bite people, so they put his mouths to suck blood in his hands, and he only sucks out plasma. And he gets beat up by Spider-Man and goes and gets checked into the hospital. And when he's in the hospital, he turns back from vampire form to human form and just sleeps in the hospital. And then when night falls again, he turns back into a vampire and he's like, I'm fine. So basically he is pretty indestructible, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know. Really, it's insane. I've watched those episodes pretty recently and that's about it.
Yeah.
He looks cool though.
He looks really cool. It's a great costume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the character designs on that show were awesome. They looked like perfect representations of the characters. I'd also like to be perfect as action figures, and that's all I wanted.
Yeah.
I have to dip. Did we have more to talk about? Sorry.
That's okay. Just really quick, sure. I wanted to talk just very briefly. So I don't think any of us watched the Batwoman show, but but they unveiled there's a new Poison Ivy on that show, and of course people are pissed because she's Asian and not white, just like, I mean, Batwoman on that show is Black, and they all got mm-hmm. pissed off about that as well. So her name is Nicole Kang is the actress, and the character's name is Mary Hamilton, so it's not even Pamela Isley,
right?
So that's real shitty, as per usual. Just on Facebook, I got into an argument with some douchebag because he went into this whole rant about how there's not even a DC multiverse anyways, because that's the Marvel multiverse. Multiverse. And I was like, yeah. So I went on a huge, long rant for about like two pages of Facebook about the history of the DC multiverse.
Who created the multiverse?
Yeah.
DC Comics created the multiverse. Crisis on Two Earths, Justice League Comics. Mm-hmm. It was like, what, the 12th issue or something? It's somewhere in that first 20. Well,
it started with the JSA in 1940 originally, or with All-Star Comics. Well, All-Star Comics, and number 3, and then it starts with Wonder Woman after that in 1953, and that's like the first parallel universe. And then the Flash showcase number 4, right? And then in Flash 123 you get the first crossover with Jay Garrick and mm-hmm. the Flash,
that awesome cover.
And then with the Justice League, finally, you get your first official multiverse crossover with Earth 1 and Earth 2. And then after that, that really opened everything up.
Then Earth 3, and then they were like, okay, now all the things that we bought now live in their own little universes, and that's why they've never met, but actually they have met. Exactly. Yeah. The idea that someone's like Marvel, I mean, what's the earliest Marvel alternate universe story? I mean, obviously DC beats it, like, you know, by probably I would wager a full decade. I would wager that going to Flash of Two Earths, I would say that is at least a full decade before the first Marvel parallel universe thing.
Well, I mean,
but like
Marvel hadn't even been created yet. I mean, we had Atlas.
Yeah.
I mean, because that was in 1961, so Marvel had just started.
Yeah,
Did Star Trek beat Marvel to the alternate dimension game?
Star Trek may have too, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like 69 with the goatees.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I know, I can't even think of when Marvel's first crossover to other universes, what would be there.
Well, I hope that guy's listening. Let's say it's Age of Apocalypse and just to piss him off.
I mean, Days of Future Past, that was more of a timeline. That was like an alternate timeline.
That was in another universe.
Yeah.
It definitely didn't become a big thing in Marvel until, I would say, Age of Apocalypse, where, like, having that one-eyed Cyclops with the long hair and mm-hmm. like that whole thing. Like, I remember being a kid and people were like just blown away by the concept of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I guess. What if as a premise, like the comic What If, was the 70s, but they didn't have like people traveling, you know, that the idea with that is like, hey, this is it's not like what happened in the show, in the Disney Plus show, where they're like jumping around.
Yeah,
but yeah, so there's
well Well,
there's that, but yeah, that's the only thing I can really. I mean, the idea of going traveling to and from these different worlds.
Okay, first appearance of the Marvel multiverse was the Avengers 85 in 1971.
So yeah, still a full decade. What was the story?
The story was, hold on, Avengers 85. I'm trying to figure it out. Give me 1 second. Avengers 85. The world is,
Was it Kang?
Probably. Hold on.
That would make sense.
Mm-hmm. The world is not for burning is the title of the issue. Of course, it involves Vision. Oh, it's a star. I should have known this. It was the Squadron Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
I just graded that issue too.
So the first Marvel multiverse story was intentionally riffing on the DC multiverse.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's your fucking proof guy.
Yeah. Nolan. But of course it was, right?
Of course it was.
Vision with that goatee though. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Let's do some quick plugs before we go. Jacob.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jacob S. Rubin. I stream every so often on Twitch with Super Trash TV. We play video games that have drinking jaw rules. So tune in and watch us drink and play video games. And also Nerd Rage, The Great Debates, which is an awesome podcast that I've been on many times. And Jess, you've also been on a fairly large number of times, is coming to a close. They are recording their final episodes. They'll have a show at Sketchfest. I'm not involved in the show, but my final two episodes will be coming out soon, including one where we debate who's better, Mario or Garfield, because of the Chris Pratt connection. So if you want to listen to that very fun, very funny episode, which I am on, that just follow Nerd Rage, The Great Debates.
Sweet. Thank you. Make sure y'all listen to that. Poor Nerd Rage. I'm so sad that it's leaving.
Yeah, I mean, hey, 4-5 years? And had a really good run. Nearly every week, yeah. But some of the members want to move on and do other projects, so it's just kind of...
Totally.
And we're getting a final episode. It's not like it just is getting canceled.
You know? And they're going to be at Sketchfest, so...
And they're going to be at Sketchfest.
Yeah, get tickets for that at Sketchfest, and it's just sfsketchfest.com.
Yeah.
Robert?
Nice. Jacob, you're good at the plug thing.
Thank you.
Yeah,
this is my third podcast this week.
You can catch me on Instagram, robert_negoesco, Robert at Robert Negoesco. I have a YouTube channel, haven't updated that recently, but I mostly post on Instagram. I got a big project coming out. New project I'm working on, so follow me there. That's the best place to keep in touch with me.
And buy your comic.
Yes, and buy my comic, which I'm doing that this weekend. I'm gonna make the official video and show it off, and I'm finally like ready to start, you know, taking orders and everything. That was a big process to get ready for that, but yeah, it's gonna be ready to be ordered and delivered to your doorstep.
And what's it called?
Institution Comics All-Star Action.
Cool. Good job. All right. And I'm Jessica Balboni, Jessa Balboni on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, all of the things. So find me there at Jessa Balboni. I also write a comic. It's coming out probably in March called Banshees. So, yeah, nice. That's it. Yeah.
All right. Does Jacob know our sign-off?
Oh, I don't think so. We have a sign-off now.
Oh, wow. Okay, I do listen to the show, but I don't remember. What is it?
Well, should we just do it? How can we? I should write it down, and then you can say it.
Do you have a pen? I don't have a pen.
I don't either.
Post
it in the chat, and I'll read it.
Oh, yeah, there's a chat. Where's that button? I don't know.
Just to draw this episode out.
And we're going
to
draw it out even more.
By the way, Mario is definitely better than Garfield.
Hey, you got to listen to the... I was on the Garfield team. You'll have to listen to the episode.
Oh, man.
Both sides make great points.
I do like Garfield. No hate.
Early Garfield, like the first, I'd say the first decade or so was actually kind of pretty funny.
Yeah. And then there's also, of course, Garfield without Garfield, which is an incredible fan edit. One of the best. Up there with Friends without the laugh track.
Well, okay, great. Yeah.
All right. And remember,
escape into
comics.
Yay! Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you guys very soon. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.